This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You're listening First Time Dads.
With me, Richard Innes.
And me, Steve Meyer.
Hello there. In this episode, we had a chat over the phone with Alan Wynne-Jones. Rugby fans will know who Alan is. He's the Welsh rugby captain, Grand Slam winner, Lions legend, and will be leading Wales at the forthcoming Rugby World Cup. We had a chat with Alan about the kind of difference between being a big tough guy on a rugby pitch and a big cuddly dad at home, and also actually how being a parent at home can actually help you be a bit of a parent in the dressing room with your teammates as well.
We spoke to Alan over the phone, so apologies for some of the audio quality might be slightly hit and miss. Alan is a Dove Men Plus Care ambassador. For more rugby and fatherhood stories, follow them on Twitter at Dove Men UK or Instagram at Dove Men. Enjoy. Alan, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast. How's your day going?
Yeah, good, not too bad. Done a bit here with Dove today. Corralled some kids, my own kids actually, not all the randomers, into doing a bit, and we've done a few shots to camera and stuff just to do a bit of awareness stuff. But yeah, it's been good.
Good. You've got two girls, right?
Two girls, Mally, four, and Eva, just about 16 months now. So
I've got a 15-month-old girl, and I've got a 3.5-year-old boy. So we're pretty close in experience.
Yeah. I'm on a 2-year-old boy and another 8-week-old boy. So I'm right in the midst of it. Yeah.
Wow.
How's the sleep?
I'm very fortunate that I've got a very, very good wife who does a lot of the night stuff. Don't get me wrong. We all get the odd the wake up, but she's great. She does the lion's share.
Don't you have the perfect excuse though? That thing of it's my job. I used to be a sports journalist here at the Mirror, right? Where back in the day. And I used to be able to watch football, rugby, cricket, whatever I wanted to watch. Because I'd say, oh, I'm really sorry, no, but we've really got to watch it because it's my job. Haven't you, as an athlete, got that perfect thing where you're like, well, you know, sleep's really important. I've got to recover.
Yeah, but there's always that response. You've got a day off tomorrow. I'm not as fast and loose as that. But no, she's very understanding because she was a pretty decent athlete. Well, more than decent athlete herself in her university days. So she understands the whole performance element of sport, and the values in recovery, etc. So she's very good to me.
That's got to be handy. Talking about the kind of realities of elite sport, I should say here, I'm a massive rugby fan. I used to play a bit of second row, so I'm slightly in awe of talking to you, even though it's only over the phone. So forgive me if I sound starstruck. But we've had a variety of athletes on the podcast before. We've had Freddie Flintoff. We've had Alex Gregory, who won an Olympic gold for rowing. We've had Greg Rutherford on, who won an Olympic gold in the long jump. And obviously, they're all guys. They all have told a very similar story, actually, about how becoming a father in a weird sort of way actually improved their performance within their sports. And I suppose first question for me is, would you say the same thing? I know I've read quotes from you in the past about how fatherhood kind of changed your perception of what you did for a living, but would you say your performance has improved as a result of becoming a dad?
It's funny. When I first came onto the scene, I was doing a law degree, and I pursued all, and I can carry on with, if you like, and finished all my education all the way until I became professional, because my drive was that I was never going to be a professional rugby player, so I had to get something behind me. So I did the law degree, and arguably, you know, some of the best times I had on and off the field when I had the distraction of doing something else, fully mind focused on something else, another task, and having the kids. It's not a distraction, put it that way. It's a full-time job, isn't it? It's a full-time job for mum, part-time job for dad, particularly if you're a sportsman. But to have that distraction and the separate focus when, you know, you've got two living, breathing responsibilities that you've got to provide for, care for, think about, worry about, even when you're not there. you know, it's all encompassing. And to have that, I suppose, breakaway then in whatever field you do in, whether it's cricket, rugby, you know, whatever sport it may be, I can fully understand, you know, the parallels to almost not, it's weird. It's not a case of letting loose, but it's almost that the physical tie of, oh, you know, I can get into the day job now. I know the kids are all right. I know everything's sorted there. But I fully understand the notion that you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Because actually, I suppose one of the things with rugby is that, and Steve and I were talking about this before we got on the call with you, it seems like two polar opposites. To have to care for a baby, small children, you've got a toddler, and then to go from that into an international test match, they do seem to be completely opposite experiences. Do you think that's a fair description?
Yeah, I think so. But there's a few props that need a kutch every now and then, or a cuddle every now and then. You know, they don't necessarily. They might not necessarily. You know, babies might not necessarily have protein powder with their milk, but props do. So it's a similar sort of notion.
You've got a point actually. Props are basically overgrown babies. That's a really interesting point.
No, it depends. I didn't say that. You said that. No, but it's funny. You that caring element. Doesn't change. I think whether you're, you know, going into a scrum, going into a lineup, you've come out of a game won or lost, and you know you're in ecstasy because you've won, or you're in, you know, in the doldrums because you've lost. Yeah, it's like you go home, someone's lost the dress for a favourite Barbie, or the snacks have run out, or we've spilt the squash on the table, and that's the agony and ecstasy for a 4-year-old or a 1.5-year-old. You know, it's all relative. And having that groundedness, if that's a word, when you come home, it is nice. And I like to think that, like I said, opposites do attract. And to have that sort of diverse feeling when you come home, which is, like you said again, the polar opposite. It's the best thing for you sometimes, rather than, you know, coming to the intensity. You might imagine if you went home and it was like an international arena when you have to try and turn the channel, or you have to try and make tea.
Yeah.
You know, thankfully it's not, you know.
But you must be physically knackered as well. That's the other thing, right? I appreciate all athletes and all professional sportsmen will be exhausted by their job. That's the nature of it, I suppose. But you must be, you know, you're beaten up, you're battered, you're bruised. The idea of then rolling around on the floor with a toddler must be, you know, quite tricky.
Yeah, well, the thing is, actually, Mally's got into foam rolling, which is quite interesting. Which is a mobility stuff. So if Daddy's doing something or stretching, she'll sometimes copy. It's like ugly gymnastics or gymnastics, okay, or rugby players sometimes. But no, it's that parallel of coming home bruised and battered, or you know, Anwen's, my wife, is just as tired sometimes, if not more tired, even though she hasn't been wrestling 16, 18 stone blokes. It's just as intense, and it's 24-hour. At least when I'm playing or training, there's somebody to blow the whistle to say stop for a minute, boys. So yeah, it's nice to come home as well, because it's the mental side of things. I think the physical side of things are easy to get over, but like I say, whether you're at an average day training, which does happen, or you, like I said, you win, lose or draw, you know, be able to come home, shut the door, be bottom of the food chain, and either be told to play Barbies, like you say, or blocks, or clean the kitchen table, is the best thing. You know, irrelevant again what the result's been on the day.
Do you think, we're talking with three dads here, we're talking on a podcast about being dads. This is quite a modern phenomenon for dads. It's a very modern, forward-looking way of approaching fatherhood. How do you feel? Do you feel comfortable in that arena? You know, as a guy talking about childcare, looking after kids, the balance of like domestic duties at home, that kind of stuff. Is that something that sits easily with you?
Yes and no, I think. Do I know what I'm doing? No. Am I learning every day? Yes. Do I have all the answers? No. And if anybody thinks they have, they're wrong. That's the only answer I have to that, because, you know, it's every child's different. Every person's different, the way they do things with their child, and no parenting method or child is going to be the same. And I think the more comfortable we are with that and saying that, is we'll get more answers rather sometimes we're asking questions for questions' sake than just realize kids are going to cry, be unhappy,
and you're not going to know why. And sometimes they'll be happy and you don't know why either, which isn't a bad thing, but you go with the flow. So I think it's important to say that, because if I look back to when I was a dad, particularly in the first, or new dad, in those first few months, you don't really know one end of yourself from the other end of yourself.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Well, exactly. We all know what we're talking about, but ultimately you live and learn. And as the child grows and you get to know the child, they grow their emotions, their value systems start developing, you know what sort of person they are, or you hope they're going to be. It does get easier. And you can have a lot of laughs along the way as well, which is the most important thing.
Definitely. I wanted to ask a little bit about touring, Ellen Winnett, just because it just in the context of parenting, because obviously, you know, when you're going, you know, often to the other side of the world with your international team or with the Lions, be away, I can't imagine being in a position where I would have to be away from my kids for that long. I mean, what's the longest you've actually had to be away from them, and how do you go about coping with that and keeping them kind of, you know, talking to daddy type thing?
Yeah, I think just the last Lions tour, I think, was one of the longest, because Mali was born just before the World Cup in 15, so it was only in England. But I stayed for the birth, and then I missed a few days in a training camp, because Gats has always been the mantra, family first, and, you know, he's always been that way. And obviously it's a pretty important thing to attend. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have heard it, the end of it forever. But
Sean Edwards felt differently, I presume.
Say again?
Sean Edwards felt differently, I presume. You should stay at training. Always training.
No. They're all pretty on the same mentality with that regard. But that World Cup anyway was in England, and I think she'd done more travelling to London than most people would in a year, because they were coming back up and down twice a week. Thankfully, and I did a few miles along the M4 just to stay in touch, because obviously she was still in her infancy. So it's that wasn't too bad. I think it was 7 or 8 weeks in 17 with the Lions, and we had Father's Day out there, so that was a tough one. There was a clip of that on the DVD, but it's, you know, it's, I think they were just trying to do it to see grown men cry. there were a few wells filling up, but I don't know if any fell. But there we are.
Yeah, right.
But like with the invent of technology, FaceTime, WhatsApp, you know, shared photo streams, it does make things easier. You know, time zones are the difficult one, but it's always nice to wake up and someone's added a photo or two, you know, while you've been asleep or whatever. And it's a strange one, but it makes it a lot easier when, like, if the girls know, or Anwen knows, that I'm going away and I'm going to be inaccessible, then I'm away and it's just FaceTime. Whereas sometimes when I'm in Cardiff, because I'm only 45 minutes away, 40 minutes away in a good run, it's a lot more difficult, because I could be home on a sixpence. But obviously, if I hit traffic or whatever, then I could end up spending more time on the M4 than I actually do with the kids. So, you know, when you're so close yet so far sort of mentality, it is just as difficult as being on the other side of the world.
That's interesting, actually, the idea that you could, it's actually easier just for everyone to know where they stand. Look, I'm not going to be home for a few weeks, so we're just going to need to come up with a process.
This is what we do now. We've got a sort of routine. If I get my schedule, send it across to Anne, she knows what happens, and then they are subject to change. But like I say, we can plan accordingly. I think when Mali was probably up until about a year, she sort of fitted into my schedule, whereas now I'm fitting into their schedule.
Sounds familiar.
That's the way it should be, because... Yeah. But that's the thing. If they're going to go on holidays or whatever, then... Or Anne's taking the girls skiing, and obviously I can't do that because of the rugby and the time of year. I'm not going to hold them back, so you crack on, and, you know, I'll miss the first few holidays, but there'll be plenty more after, obviously, when I've, you know, finally hung out the boots.
What surprised you about becoming a dad? Is there anything that you kind of weren't expecting?
Hello.
Was there anything that you weren't expecting about becoming a dad that sort of surprised you, you know, caught you out slightly?
Where do I start? I think when I played coming through the academy, like up to the upper end and breaking into the seniors at the Ospreys, I remember guys saying, they're just the kids, oh my God, it's the hardest thing ever. You know, it's best thing I've ever done, but it's the hardest thing ever. Like, oh, I can't be that bad. And you're laughing because you exactly know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I, like I said, it goes back to that analogy. It's 24/7. You know, you've got eyes in the back of your head. The fact of, and everybody says it, like, what did I do with my time before I had children? And it's just, it's this, I know they're cliches and you heard them all before, but it's like, wow. But it's funny now, though, that we've got a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. I think we've got a bit of both. So we've got eyes in the back of the head with one, and then we got the other who's having conversations that I'm having with, I have similar conversations with adults at times, and she's using words in context, and I'm like, when did that start? And it's just those, like, they're not momentous stages of development, but you're realizing that, flipping heck, where'd she pick that up from? And you sort of just, you know, you go, like I said earlier in the outset of the conversation, you go with the flow, and those are the moments and the times or phases, whatever you want to call it.
It's interesting.
You really enjoy.
How do you observe the dynamic between the two, the younger one and the older one? And when the second one came along for us, there was a little bit of jealousy perhaps going on. But now they're buddies and they're just like walk around holding hands. And the first words that Iris says when she wakes up is Jack Jack, because her brother's called Jackson. Yeah. It's really sweet to see. Is it a similar sort of thing with your two?
Yeah. That it's funny because obviously you see the relationship of Mally and Anwen, obviously. So she's mum and Mally 4. But then it's nice to see their relationship 4 and 1. And yeah, they have that friction at the start and they still argue over toys and stuff. But I sort of like to see them standing up for themselves against each other. And, you know, you see more of the character and personality come out. I think they bring more out of each other than we would to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree.
They're closer in age, obviously.
I agree. They've got their own world, haven't they?
Yeah, exactly. And it's that thing when, you know, they start going to school and, again, those words and the picking mannerisms up. And I think they always say, don't they, number 2 rate of development is always quicker than number 1 because they got imitation, etc. So to see all that and those parallels and the relationship and hopefully the bond that they'll have is, you know, you can sit back and watch, you know, when they start playing in a corner or whatever. As you sit back and you don't really need a TV then. You can just sit back.
No, exactly.
That'd be nice.
Are they like you?
Are they what, sorry?
Are they like you, do you think?
Oh, I don't know. I think Mally might be. I think my wife thinks Mally's like me and Anwen's like her, because Mally's pretty shy. But I'm pretty forthright, shall we say. but then Ava's like just the walking around with a smile on her face. So it's, you know, like you say, to see the difference as well is the craziest thing, because you think, well, we made them, so surely they should be relatively similar, but, you know, you take joy in the differences, don't you?
There were things you were saying there, Alan, about the way that you like to see the girls interact together that just struck me as being the type of thing that you might have learned, not learned, but kind of picked up, I suppose, and taken a little bit from rugby. I'm wondering if, because, you know, everyone knows that rugby's got a very specific culture about it and there's a very specific set of philosophies and ways to behave and not behave within rugby. Are there things that you think you've taken from the game and kind of almost inadvertently or subconsciously, you know, sort of implemented into your parenting style?
Yeah, I think rather than go too scientific, or, you know, it's, you know, you can get paralysis by analysis now and everyone's a professional, but I think in my earlier days I probably spoke more than I listened and did more than I watched, and I think that's two things I regret, whereas now I'm a bit older in my career and I try to listen more and speak less and watch more and be accurate when I do more, if that makes sense. And I think that's the same with parenting then, so you can listen to what the kids want rather than tell them what they need, and obviously watch them, because sometimes they'll show you things that they can do that you didn't think they could do, and you know, you potentially could hold them back. And I know we're talking about a 4-year-old and a 16-month-old, but it could be something as simple. Since when did she climb on the, you know, since when could she climb on the sofa?
Yeah.
Or if she can get down on the sofa, she can climb on the sofa, but if she can't get off, she's not allowed to. You know, little things like that. I know that, I know it's a strange comparison, but
I think it is, because is that a bit like what you've taken from, I mean, you've been a captain for a long time now, that almost sounds a bit like a kind of captaincy philosophy of sorts that actually ends up, but you know, like kind of allowing players to make mistakes, allowing players to learn, allowing them to show you what they can do. Is there a bit of a parallel there?
I wouldn't disagree. I think also as well, I think the difference in the rugby is I've got a lot of peers that are close to my age, and I think a lot, they've got a lot of experience. So why would I hold them back? And if I can't solve a problem, I'm happy to, you know, let the next guy, or if someone else has got something decent to say or he's made a point, then I'm not going to hold anyone back. Because particularly in a team sense, from a rugby point of view, we're all working towards the same goal, which is ultimately to win. So, you know, I don't, it's slightly different with the kids, and I always listen to my wife. I'd never speak across her anyway because she's the boss.
Yep, again, familiar.
No, it's exactly the same. But it's exactly the same with the children. You know, they can, you know, they might learn something in school that I don't know they can do. So watch, listen, learn and play.
You mentioned earlier that when you were a younger player and you heard older players talking about, or not simply older players, players that were parents talking about what it's like to be a parent. Do you talk in the dressing room or in training camps to other players who are dads about the fatherhood experience, you know, what they've been up to, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, very much so. I think, you know, it's easy to share as well. We're you're lucky in a team sport that you've all got the automatic forum, haven't you, to discuss first days at schools, birthdays, chicken pox, the things that everyone's going to go through, the trials, tribulations. You know, to anyone who hasn't got kids, it sounds like the mundane, but these are big, you know, significant milestones in parenting and for the kids. And I think, like I say, to be fortunate enough to be in a team sport where you can share those experiences, and a lot of guys that at the minute have got, I say there's an age range of children from flipping 1 to infants to 6, so it's quite a wide spectrum. So there's always going to have someone that's, you know, in their late 20s, early 30s that'll be you know, in the midst of something like that.
Do you end up with, in the kind of dressing room that there's almost that sort of natural, I appreciate you want the dressing room to be as together as possible, but there's almost that natural split between the dads who are talking about being dads and the younger lads who aren't quite at that point in their lives?
Oh, not at all. I wouldn't think it's as clearly defined split as you think, because don't forget there's uncles, cousins,
of course.
You know, nephews, brothers, all, you know, it's not as clearly defined as that. There's obviously a lot younger guys that, you know, are just cracking on, but I fully understand that as well. But I think we've on the international side at the minute, we've particularly got a good group of guys that, you know, have that. It's not a familial thing, but it's an openness to say, well, you'll do what you do and I do what I do. And there's enough of a broad spectrum of people, in the situations to deal with anything and just crack on. I think it's pretty open like that.
Do you obviously you're usually a successful rugby player, and there'll be young players that look to you as an idol and a role model. You become aware, I mean, you're doing this thing with Dove, that there's an element now to you perhaps being a father role model for some younger guys as well, who see that you can have that be a dad and a successful person, how you manage those two parts of your life.
Yeah, you're trying to make me sound old now. You're doing a good job about it. I think I understand what you're saying. I'd like to think younger uncle probably rather than the father figure. But I definitely know when I came through, there were players that helped me, whether they knew they were helping me or not. I'm not going to say father figure or uncle figure or whatever. It wasn't like that. I think as a professional player, wherever you play or who you play for, you want to help the players come through that want to listen. If somebody's asking you a question for an answer, and you give it and they use it, then you're willing to help them again. You know, so I don't know. I don't think it's a paternal thing. I think it's a professional sharing of knowledge, because particularly, you know, you always want to help people that want to listen. It's always more difficult to help people that don't want to listen, even though they ask a question. I know it sounds like a contradiction in terms, but I'm more than happy to, you know, give my viewpoint or on anybody who's trying to improve themselves. And we're fortunate that we've got quite a few guys that are doing that at the minute.
I appreciate we're reaching the end of our time. I can't let you go without asking you, as a father of two girls,
yeah,
what are your fears for the future? Because I've got, you know, a 16-month-old like you, and I, you know, yeah, when boyfriends start to arrive, social media, body image, that kind of stuff, it terrifies me.
Yeah. I know. I think it's more feel sorry for the rest of the world, to be honest with you, when they grow up. I think as long as they're confident and comfortable in their own skin and they know where home is, I'll be happy enough, because It is a big wide world out there, and sometimes the stuff that is the most dangerous stuff you can't see, particularly with social media, etc. these days. But I think it's funny how the fears of parents today have probably changed from the fears, you know, 30, 40 years ago, say with the advent of social media. But as long as they know where home is, I'll be happy.
I've got one more question for you, Alan, actually. I'm aware you're, having been in the middle of a scrum myself, you know, several times, I'm aware you're coming home presumably from training, from matches, with all sorts of, you know, kind of cuts, scrapes, black eyes. I mean, I've seen you, you know, with your head strapped up many, many times. Your eldest daughter now must be getting to an age where she can recognise when daddy's coming in with a bandage on his head, for instance. So have you had any instances where you've had to kind of explain to her, it's okay, it's just daddy's job?
Oh yeah, you have a few, particularly with the stitches and stuff, because those ones can look pretty ugly for a few days. But it's more bruises, because they look like, you know, like the big red button, don't press it. Well, that's red rag to a bull for a child, isn't it? So if I see a bruise, they're like, what's this do? And then once you show a sign of weakness, there's no turning back.
So your daughter is hindering your recovery from injury, is that that's the conclusion here?
Or she's helping it. It depends.
Yeah, I suppose how you look at it. Yeah,
it's true. It's true.
Last question for now, actually, Evan, because I know you've got to go. This is the very, very last one.
That's the third last question.
I know. I'm enjoying it too much.
Sorry, you're 3 seconds over as well.
I'm enjoying it too much. Just obviously, you'll be off to Japan before you know what's coming. How are you prepared for that? Because that's obviously the big thing this year in terms of, you know, Wales. Hopefully, will be going as far in the tournament as you possibly can. Being the other side of the world again, have you got your process all set up in terms of looking after the family while you're over there?
Well, first and foremost, it's a bit week to week, because obviously it's a long way to go yet with games, etc. There is a long-term plan in place that everybody's aware of, but I'm very conscious that it's day-to-day, week-to-week, game-to-game. So, you know, if I get out there, we'll be organised, but at the minute, it's make the most of the family time and try and, you know, be as best prepared as I can for the games and training weeks we have to come.
You're always one torn hamstring away from disaster, aren't you? So hopefully, fingers crossed, you stay healthy. Fingers crossed you stay fit and healthy.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for your time. Cheers for coming on to the podcast. Hope it's been enjoyable, not too painful.
No, it was all good, boys. Cheers. Thank you.
Cheers.